do that. I'm missing that. I'm like why is this the show that I am seeing today? Like what is it? Like that's such a superpower that improv has. And like I've been telling people, I'm like, are you reading the news? Like, do you see what's in the newspaper? Like there was a really fun story about two state officials from Rhode Island who came to Philly and just like completely unethical behavior, right? We're like basically asking to be bribed. We're like demanding things they had no right to be. And it was just like this fantastic thing of like these two Rhode Island state officials coming to Philly and just acting so poorly. It was just like such a fun news story to read of like then someone in Philly called them out and like became this huge scandal in Rhode Island. I was like, I want to see that on stage. I'm just like, yeah, man. Like, today's the day. Why is today the day?
Do we have to do this show on producing?
No,
Can
if there's something else that pops to mind, whatever.
we kind of keep going on this train of thought with a quick intro and just let's just go.
Sure.
Yeah, do you
Can we
want to
go?
just intro it and we'll let people catch up to the conversation?
Hey everybody, and welcome back to the Comedy Fix. My name's Jamie. I'm here with Chris and Sam, my friends and co-hosts, and we're excited to bring you another episode about something.
Well, we're in the middle of a discussion right now.
Yeah, yeah. This one is like breaking news. We actually had another idea for this episode, but we started talking as soon as we started seeing each other, and this feels more pressing.
Well, because I don't want to be super specific, or you know what I'm saying, maybe a little more general, but like just the idea of, you know, how much do we have to honor the play we all agreed to run during the show? Can you break free from that play? I hope I'm using the word, you know, like running a play, not like doing a play. It's getting confusing. When you are tickled or sparked or inspired to do something in the middle of a piece, should you sit on that for the betterment of the piece as a whole? Because the group has kind of agreed, you know, beforehand that like, this is what we're gonna do tonight. Or should you run with that, even if it might confuse other team members and maybe even step on some toes? You know, I'll say we're bringing this up because Heyday had a really fun and silly show last night, and we started making funny and silly moves that were not typical of what we do. And I don't think, well, actually, I know nobody was upset that these moves were being made, but it certainly wasn't what we typically do. And it just, I wonder, Sam, you know, what if you're coaching a team and they start, or you're on a team? What happens if somebody starts doing their own thing? Does it seem selfish? Does it seem like they're adding to the piece? I don't know. What are you thinking?
I love this question, and I feel like we're jumping into it a little bit, and so listeners get to be a fly on the wall here. But this feels actually very relevant to me. I've been on a House Herald team here in Philly for the last year, and our house runs over, so we're talking about like the next version of it, and we've been doing Herald. But we were just at the Baltimore Improv Festival. We got through second beats. We didn't even get to our second group game. But like something we've been trying to do is like play it a little bit more slowly, right? Not just like hit game really quickly, like try to find these kind of like more interesting, weird scenes. I think you'd actually like really vibe with the coaching we're getting. And so it's like, all right, we've done the training wheels Herald. How do we break that? And how do I, as a performer on the team, indicate to you, another performer on the team, that like based on the suggestion, I'm going to take it this way? And like how can we each break it ourselves? Because I think what you're talking about is something I've seen in like physical comedy classes of like, no, reach so far that you're off balance a little bit and then catch yourself, but like put yourself off balance in a way. And I think, you know, pre-COVID, one of the things that was maybe causing a little stagnation was there wasn't a lot of off balance work, right? We knew what we were doing. We could do the bounce pass, and it was very clear what was going on. Now we're introducing a little bit more chaos, right? And I think This is a little bit of that clowning element. Like Will Hines recently had his article that sort of talked about this like sillier, more heterogeneous form of improv in LA. And I think that's different influences coming in and breaking it different ways. And so that's kind of what I'm hearing here. What do you guys think?
Also, Jamie, I mean, before you even speak, you know, Jamie and Liam, we mentioned this before, but they keep, you know, fucking shit up on stage. They keep just going nuts. And like, I would imagine it's easier with two people who understand that the play we're running is that there is no play. And if there is a play, we break that play. If there's that play, then we break that play. It's harder with like, or could be harder, more difficult with seven other people on stage. But you're finding success, Jamie, in a couple of ways. One, the audiences are enjoying the shows. I saw a video of like the audience, half the audience screaming, no, and the other half screaming, do it, to a physical piece you did with Liam the other day. And then it seems like you're finding personal success in that it's you're enjoying that process, right?
Yeah, 100%. I have so many thoughts about this. And I know, Sam, when we would work together, a lot of times we have these similar conversations about like, what are we trying to accomplish? And, you know, are we kneecapping each other? Or am I kneecapping Sam before we can even get it off the ground? And
yes, you were.
To what success, if any? You know, sometimes it does work, sometimes it does not. So I do have a lot of thoughts about this, because I'm always the person advocating for moving from a place of inspiration. And if that means not following the premise that's been established in the first 30 seconds because something shinier has popped up, I'm all for that, because I think that following inspiration, if it's genuine inspiration, then I think the audience recognizes that, and that's fun for them to watch that flow. I think it's exciting. So yeah, I
also, Jamie, we didn't talk about this a lot. I'm gonna put you right here on the spot, right here on the Comedy Fix. I was talking to some people I'm coaching, and they had caught your last park show at Fanatic, which was like a smaller house, kind of a different vibe that night for whatever reason. And they were saying it was like kind of uneasy to watch you two go through this, which we've talked about in rehearsal, that the uneasy moment, Sam, where you're just trying to be patient with it. You don't know where it's headed, but even being patient, the ego, these words, your brain is screaming at you to make a move or make something funny happen. The audience is getting uneasy, maybe even uncomfortable. And probably you are too. It's not like you're having the most fun and they're like, what's going on? You're in the middle, which we used to deal with you two a lot, of those transitional moments. Where are we headed, and how do we be okay with the transitional moments? Talk to me a little bit about that, Jamie.
Yeah, again, it does actually relate to moving from a place of inspiration, because I think about that on a broader level. It's not just even within a scene, it's even within a day. You know, maybe I'm inspired and I could do a fucking killer show at 2 p.m. because I'm jacked. But at 9:30, after working all day, it's Friday, I just had to watch, you know, an hour of other people do improv and stuff like that. It's like, I'm not inspired right now. But now this is my slot. So here we go, you know? And so now I'm on stage. I don't have inspiration. The tank is empty, but I have been tasked with coming on stage to perform, and I don't have anything right now. And so, but you know, it's one of those things where you can't, well, maybe you can, but I think it's really hard to find inspiration in a vacuum. So you have to do something, and that something is maybe not inspired, but hopefully of interest. You know, it's the lower level of inspiration. I'm interested in what I'm saying right now and what I'm doing. I'm not fully hyped on it. It's not fully like charging me, but it's enough that I'm like, oh, okay, I am interested in where this is going. And I think, you know, the difference between interest or moving from a place of interest and moving from a place of inspiration is visible to an audience for sure. And I think maybe that's what those people were referencing, is like, yeah, the first 20 minutes of that show, we didn't have anything. We literally didn't have anything. We just went up there and just started taking stabs at things, hoping to find it. And then boom, in the last 5 minutes, we locked into something, and then we found the inspiration, and then the show was over.
I want Sam to jump in here, because this is also his podcast, but I want to ask you one last question. Actually, the question goes to both of you, because I think we talk a lot about the right and wrong ways to do scenes, this inspiration stuff, questions you should be asking yourself during a scene, character questions you're asking yourself, player questions you're asking yourself. Talk to us a little bit about being in a show, a two-person show, Jamie, where for the first 20 minutes, it's kind of not hitting. I want to know what's going on in your mind. What's happening in your mind? What are you at peace with? What is uncomfortable for you? Talk to me. I don't really hear about the process of like in the mind, because when we watch it from the outside, it's a little difficult to know. Obviously, it's difficult to know what's going on in the player's mind. Are they okay? Are they scared? Are they skeptical? Do they have this under control? You know, all these questions come up for me. What's going on? What's going on in your mind?
For me, I'm aware that it's not going that well. It's okay. It's not offensively bad, but it's not sparking anybody. And so I'm aware of that. And then it's, you know, a little bit of disappointment, dismay. Cause I'm like, oh, you know, this is our 20 something minutes on stage. I want this to go really well. I want everyone to have a good time. I want to be having a good time, and it's just not connecting. So there's a little bit of like dissatisfaction, but you know, you keep plugging away, you keep going, you keep trying to find small moments, and maybe you hit a little bit here, but it wasn't enough to like really set you off. So yeah, it's a shifting, searching energy. It's a very searching kind of show, which I think again is visible to an audience, and that's why they feel uneasy, because they don't feel like the performers are locked in. It's one of those things where I think the highs are higher and the lows are more often, you know.
But do you think you can train for those moments? Do you think you can train for, you know, like a Navy SEAL's got to do like those crazy things to train to be, you know, a little bit more comfortable in the uncomfortable? Is it more reps perhaps? Is it something that I don't know.
Yeah. Last thing I'll say, and then I'll hand the baton to Sam. I think that the training comes into not to acknowledge the lack of the spark. And I feel disappointed because I'm like, it's not there. It's not there. I want it, looking for it. But then to not go too far the other direction, like it's a searching energy, but I don't want to start taking huge swings at crap. Like that's where I think the shows go wrong. And so it's trusting enough that like, let's just keep searching. Let's just keep plugging away and keep trying to make these things work and tool it together. So it is a certain amount of patience and trust that hopefully something will happen without like taking these ginormous swings at bad tropes or stupid, easy jokes that then read as desperate. Because I'd rather be in a searching energy for 25 minutes than like a desperate energy. That's where it's like, oh, that's really hard to watch. That's really hard to watch. So there is a little bit, I think, of something, skill or patience or something that goes into it that keeps it from going. It's the show's at a 3. It could easily go into the negatives if you didn't just keep plugging along until you find it. So that's my read. Sam, please take over.
I've been here the whole time. It's so funny to hear you say that, because I think I'm getting better at pulling the ripcord. And what I mean by that is I find that when I'm really thinky or like medium energy and not very reactive, that's when I'm getting stuck, right? But if I have a big reaction and like I just go to a 10 on something, all of a sudden I'm in it, right? And I'm being stupid and people can laugh at it. And like from a physical place or an emotional place, or even like an audience interaction kind of place, depending how small the house is, especially like that. If I can find something that gives me joy to play with, even if it's not like a joyful emotion, right? Like I could be happy to be sad about something or whatever. That's my only way out of it. And I'm trying to be better about recognizing it, because I've certainly had that show where like 15 minutes into it, I'm like, okay, the first scene I chose to be sitting on a train, and that is death. And I don't want to go back to that scene again. But like, yeah, sometimes you just kind of like find that one thing and you're like, all right, if you roll a 7 on actually you're going to roll some die. If you win, that guy's going to pay you $20. What number you have to roll an 8, go for it. nailed it, fantastic, you know, like just, and then big reaction to it. The best way I describe that is like finding a ripcord somewhere, right? And just like pulling it and just going big energy.
But even that, Sam, I want to hone in on that. Sure. Finding a ripcord. To me, I think that's your way of saying finding that moment of inspiration, finding something to latch on to. Like, it's still searching. Like, you're not ripping any cord. You're not saying, oh, you said the two times in a sentence. You're insane. You know, it's a little.
No, because, you know, it has to be about me and it has to be like my thing. I can't make it your thing. I can't make you or try to change you. It has to be me. It has to be physical. It has to be emotional. But there's so many exercises, right? We did one called the Costanza, where you just say something innocuous and the person has to like George Costanza, talk themselves into a 10 emotion about how like you're late for your flight and that's going to lead to your girlfriend leaving you and you're going to die alone and there's nothing going to be good, right? It's Tuesday and you're late or whatever. There's so many of these exercises we have where it's like, no, anything, if you just take it to a 10, can feed you and feed the scene. And I think sometimes I forget that because like I'm low energy or I'm tired or all these sorts of things. But I want to sort of pivot a little bit because we have a very interesting thing here in Philadelphia with the Pig Iron School, which is a devised theater school that trains in physical comedy. And the Philly Improv Theater sort of has done a really good job of hiring Pig Iron graduates to be instructors. And what's fascinating to me is that there are people who have more traditional improv backgrounds, or maybe they did short form in college, or they've studied at long form elsewhere. And then there are these teachers who have a very theatrical, physical sort of training. And, you know, trying to merge those two worlds, like you are trying to find it a little bit, right? It's like, okay, we're doing this exercise. I'm not quite sure how to apply it to improv. The teacher's like, yeah, I don't really know either, but let's figure it out. And that's, to sort of circle back to Chris's original point of like calling plays the other people don't recognize, it's like, oh, you're working from like a completely different book. Like you're talking about how we can either balance or imbalance the presence of people on the stage, and that's the game. Like that's not justified, that's not philosophy, that's not absurd behavior. Like that's taking like where we are on the actual stage space and how if I move towards you, you have to like counterbalance it in some ways. And it's just like a completely different playbook. And so that's been very exciting to me, but also very challenging because it's like, yeah, how do these worlds meld together?
Well, yeah, this is a lot. It's funny to see how do these worlds meld together, because in my classes and in my workshops, there isn't a predetermined understanding that we're all coming at this from traditional improv anymore, Sam. So it really has been nice to just like, we always kind of make up our own warm up, kind of make up a thing. I don't know what it is. And when I want to judge it, it gets scary. But when I just quiet that down for a second and I'll join in with them, you know, we just did one last week and it was fucking great, dude. It was great. It was great. And it sets the tone for the evening of like touching a different side of this color, this performance color palette where we usually play over here. But now we're going to go over here and touch this area, which is a little, where we don't spend a lot of time. But then what happens, I was talking to Jamie about this, is we do a couple of rounds of funky idea scenes, just kind of stuff I'm thinking of, like, oh, let's just keep playing with this fun, weird physical stuff. And then we do this in. Okay, after a couple of rounds of that, it was really fun. Okay, now let's do some improv scenes and let's try to incorporate this. And then the bottom falls out. It's like somehow people go, oh, that was a fun artistic journey, but we don't call those improv scenes necessarily. Now it's time to put on our traditional improv scene hat. And then you see all these old behaviors, all these old habits, and just these old ideas of what should be happening. And then it is hard to incorporate the kind of woo-woo-ness or funky characterness, because you are, in the interview scene again. You know what I mean? And so like, it's like, on the one hand, these people, I mean, we had one student that just said something to the effect of like, I've never felt more alive or more like myself than I just did right now doing this exercise. It was this really cool moment where this guy just kind of went off, and I loved it, that for him. But then like, in the same 2.5 hour workshop, Sam, you have that breakthrough, and then we go, okay, now let's do, now how do we incorporate this into our traditional scene work? And it gets messed up. It's like, somehow I want to either stop doing traditional scene work in general, just as a whole, and I mean that, Sam, or change the wording of this all so that it doesn't feel like fun time is over. Let's get back to scene work. Do you know what I mean? I want them to stay together.
Yeah. I mean, how many times have you done a spacewalk in a class or a warm up, right? Who does that? Who actually then starts a scene with, you know what, I'm just going to leave this scene with my chin and see where it goes. And like, something I've tried to be a lot better about is, oh, I can use the exercise in a scene. I don't have to forget that the exercise happened. I could start the scene based on any exercise we've ever done, right? Yeah.
It's so funny, Sam, that nobody, or very rarely, is anybody bringing in the exercise into the scene. You see how this feels, everybody? Yeah. See, that's a little freeing? Yeah. And we all agree, and they believe it. Let's do some scenes. Bonk. It's just gone. It's just gone. It's really fascinating. I want to see something that's cool about Jamie. And I'm not taking credit for this, Jamie, but it just happened to be that things went down this way. You know, when you left, Sam, there was a huge Sam void in our lives. But you and Jamie, yes, there still is. You and Jamie were doing work that was the most exciting work I had ever been a part of. And I really mean that. And I loved our rehearsals because it did not feel like a typical coach player rehearsal. It felt like a co-op of just, honestly, it's the first time I had felt like I was an artist in a very long time in those. And that's thanks to you guys. And, you know, Jamie kind of found himself for a while, as we all kind of fall into different molds and break out of, in the kind of trickster place, right? He's very good at that kind of, and he would mess with you all the time. My poor baby Sam, he would just pummel him. No. But one time, so then I would see Jamie in classes or workshops, and he doesn't want to do the traditional thing, or he's bored by that, or like we're saying, he's not inspired right now to do that. And it would sometimes come across as anti-scene partner, or like, I wouldn't say confrontational, that's too strong, but like, I could see somebody walking off who just had done a scene with Jamie and being like, I don't know if he likes me, or like if he was bored with me. There might be that impression in one of our classes. And again, Jamie, I'm not taking the credit. I just want to say,
take the credit. I know where this is going. Just take the credit.
In one of the classes, I had written individual little reminders for them for that night. You know, you did this, that. And for Jamie, I said something to the effect of like, I want you to be the puppet in the scene. I don't want you to be the puppet master, or, you know, the marionette, or whatever the word is. But I still didn't obviously want him to lose his fire and his like originality and his like lust for this inspiration, which is my favorite things about him. And he has now become, and I bring all this to say, because he did a scene just last Thursday that was really fucking incredible, where he's doing all the, I'm speaking for you, but it's this scene, really moving from a place of inspiration, and it's beautiful and it's fun and it's sparking us and himself and his scene partner. But it's not against his scene partner. On the contrary, he's actually incorporating and channeling this energy. Again, I'm speaking for yourself, and I'll let you take over, Jamie, into a collaborative moment that would not have been there if, Jamie, you weren't more, I don't know if the word is open, but it's just been really cool, Sam, to see that it's not either you do traditional scene work where you support your partner, or you do funky stuff by yourself, that it still can be collaborative, even if your scene partner isn't as hep to the ideas that we are. And furthermore, he makes his scene partners better, and the scenes go to these fantastical places as a unit. And it's been really heartening, because part of me was afraid that this was going to be a solo mission or something, or like, you know what I'm saying? I can only do this stuff if I have my funky team. But no, Jamie's really been blending those two worlds. Jamie, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, there's, I appreciate that.
Yes. Okay. I was going to say there's a compliment in there somewhere for you.
No, I appreciate that. And I appreciated that note. And it's something I had been thinking about, because I think the reason I would come at scenes so frequently as high status or as in a position of control in the scene is because I am so tired of the normal traditional improv scenes. And so I always felt that if I let the other person control, it was going to be an argument with a roommate about toilet paper, and I would want to kill myself and never do improv again. So I'm like, oh, well, I've got to spark this. I've got to push this in a direction so that it doesn't become the traditional crap that we see all the time. And so I think that's where that was coming from, is I was just, and I still am constantly in the pursuit of like original feeling work, stuff that feels original and spicy and exciting to me. That's not just the same old stuff. And so I never really trusted my scene partner enough to do that. And so what I've found though, is by letting go of control and letting them lead and really incorporating where they're at with where I'm at and kind of letting them guide it a little bit, is there's this cool place of letting go of control that allows me to play more. Because when I'm in control, I'm not playing, because I'm directing, I'm guiding, I'm controlling and constructing. But when I let them lead, I'm not doing any of those things. I'm just playing. And that's what's been so fun and kind of helped me get to that place of originality and inspiration, but through play rather than through control. And so in a very cool way, it's like really helped unlock me. And now I go with the flow. I feel like I'm low status almost in every scene now in a fun way, but that allows me to then usurp status, which is part of the play and control. And that's a fun thing to play with. So,
which, by the way, this is not my workshop podcast, nor is it the Jamie podcast, but just really quickly, Sam, back in the day when I would do a workshop, if there was an odd number of people, or if I just wanted to drive a point home, I would jump up on stage and do a scene. And I always felt very confident, very like, yeah, okay, let me show you. So here's the point of view. Here's how you get to point of view. Here's how you heighten. Here's pattern. Lately, because things have just gone into a different world, occasionally when I jump up, which is not as much as I used to, there's a new energy on stage. And that's fear for me, Sam, where I'm like, I don't know this world. I don't have all the rules. I don't know everything anymore. And it's been scary and really fun. But Jamie and I did was it the last scene of the night? I don't know. We did one scene. I was like, we have time. Let me just jump up with Jamie real quick. It was set up that I was definitely high status. He works for me. I'm the boss. Get to work. Keep working in the farm type thing. It was like one little line at the top. I grabbed him. I grabbed him in like a mean way, one maybe in a sexual way of just like, I own you, okay? I go take a seat. Jamie turns with that same shovel where he was low status, obviously working for me. If you pause it right there, everyone says Jamie's the lowest status, I'm the highest status. Couldn't be higher and lower. Takes that shovel, chops my head off, throws my head, flings it with the shovel, which then opened up this entire world for me, Sam, that I don't get to spend a lot of time, that I want to spend more time in. Now I'm talking as the flying head. Now my body is on the ground searching for the head. I'm still able to communicate with Jamie because my head is still far away and I can still talk. And it turns out the hole he was digging ended up being my own grave, right? I fall into it as just the body. Then he grabs my head, brings it back to show me what's going on. That was such a fun scene, Jamie, and I was so satisfied fucking artistically, which is not a word I get to use a lot, or hadn't been able to use a lot for a long time. it still was an improv scene. It wasn't a clown scene necessarily. It didn't go into a place that people had no idea what was going on. There was even a little bit of a narrative. There's a story being told there. While my head is still off, Sam, I want all of that. I want all of that constantly and forever. The end. Bye, everybody.
I mean, you know, it's so hard to capture improv scenes when you're talking about them, but I love that. I love that description. It's something that, you know, I think for a long time, there were a couple frameworks that we put over improv, right? And like one of them was, you know, Chicago theater. And so it's like relationship and actors. And another one was like New York sketch. And it's like fast and gonna be funny or whatever. And just because of where I am and what we're doing, I think we don't have a strong influence. So we're all pulling a lot of like different influences together. And one thing that when we were working together, we were kind of leaning towards was like cubism and like sort of surreal and some of those ideas of like how we can, you know, make the stage space refracted in itself. And something I'm seeing now people kind of play with is, I don't want to use the term magical realism because that does have very like specific connotations, but sort of like a little bit of fantasy, a little bit of unreality, right? And it's so magic.
I just got to interrupt you because I brought this up in class on the way there where I was thinking, why don't we have a date scene where at the end of the meal, you're dabbing yourself with a napkin and then you just eat the whole napkin. But it's never mentioned. It's never referenced. It's just that little spark of what the fuck was that? And then the scene continues, right? Or you eat the plate type stuff. Jamie's probably rolling his eyes at that idea because I've said it 7 times, but I like that idea, Sam. That's what I'm trying to talk. That's what I like, where I'm not throwing out scene work or I'm not doing all just fantasy, crazy world. I like the idea of having both a little flicker of absurd, a little flicker of something abstract still. Cause you know, I'm an emotional player cause I'm a great actor. So I want all that. I want all that.
Well, I think about that kind of thing all the time. It's like, why don't we go to more absurd places? Why don't we go past a 10 on the scale of reality? I think part of it is the boogeyman of justification and explanation. Is when you do these crazy things where all of a sudden you're eating a napkin. And if you are from the school of thought that says you have to justify things, that's hard to justify. That can be hard to justify. And so I think people make smaller moves that are easier to explain, because then they can wrap their brain around it. They can tie it up in a bow, as opposed to when you make these big absurd moves. I think we need to kind of let go of justification a little bit. Maybe just let the two actors on stage agreeing to the bizarreness be the justification. That's all we need, is that Agreed. They're agreeing on the world. And then it kind of takes Agreed. Care of itself most of the time. I don't know. Maybe Agreed. There is a place for justification somewhere still in this.
Well,
in
if you're inspired to justify a moment because it's your character wants to say that versus the actor thinks it's time to do it. Sam, you know, I don't really warm up anymore, but we'll just go around in a circle and blah, 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 and pass the sound and movement. And I say, whenever you're inspired to start a quick little 2 or 3 line scene with that sound and movement, please do so. Every time, Sam, it's somebody going blah and the other person going, hold on, you're not scary enough as a ghost. You need to try it this way. We keep justifying the unusual behavior rather than just going blah, 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 and then having a whole conversation about taxes through blah. You know what I'm saying, Sam? Where it's like players are afraid to just go into that space together. So instead it's over-labeling and over-justifying, and it bogs everything down and removes the fun away almost immediately.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I forget what caused it, but I had one. I've been coaching a team, and one scene, the student just beeped like R2-D2 for the entire scene. And, you know, never really had to explain why that character was talking that way. But boy, was it just delightful to have like one person using English and like having that whole conversation and the other person communicating, right? And accepting and yes anding and all those sorts of things, but just doing it in a slightly like tweaked way. There's so much fun with that stuff, but it's one of those reasons why I heard someone give the advice of like, you have to take a level 1 class every so often, because you have to be reminded that anything is possible. And it's so interesting when you're around people who have not been told the rules, who have not been taught justification. And you just say, like, your suggestion is the ocean and your imagination. And all of a sudden they're talking to mermaids. And you're like, great. Like, we don't have to justify, oh, well, because of pollution, humans and fishes have merged with each other, right? We can just live in a world with mermaids.
I wonder where, how we got to this place of great, quote unquote, great teams just explaining the funny rather than like being the funny, you know, or like these great, smart players who are good at, I don't know, speaking or something. It's these, I can think of, I don't want to say team names, but just like older good teams, probably Heyday included, where it's just like, we're really good at talking about the crazy thing that's happening right now. And the audience loves it.
I wonder if it's tied to the, you know, the not the rise of stand-up comedy, but tied to stand-up comedy, where a lot of it is just commentary on crazy behavior, crazy fun things. There were comedians, of course, out there, stand-up comedians who were, you know, more performative and crazy themselves. But I think of like the Seinfelds and people who, you know, were very successful and popular commenting on the weird behavior, critiquing the weird behavior. And I wonder if, you know, maybe that spilled over into improv, same thing with sketch as well, rather than, you know, just having vaudevillian goofballs who there's very little commentary on the weird thing. People are just acting weird and then the scene's over. So,
but, you know, it's easier to talk about it, right?
And it's safer. Yeah.
It's safer. It's less demanding physically. I mean, Jamie, when we used to do shows together, I knew it was a good show if I was a little sweaty at the end of it. Right. Same. Like then I knew that we were actually showing and doing and physicalizing. And that's been a big thing for me with like the team I've been coaching a little bit, is just sort of like, you're talking about it. Why don't you just do it? Just go have fun doing the thing that you're talking about, how much you like, just go ahead and do it. And it's empowering. Last week I ran an exercise with them where I called it the baby. And I was just like, just act like a baby in this scene. Okay. I want you to be affected emotionally by things. I want you to find things that you like and just play with them in a misbehaving way because you don't know the rules. And it was very freeing. And like, once they sort of like got like, oh, like I'm not me, I'm like a very childish version of me. We can kind of get back to that level of play, I think, a little bit. But look, this is not unique to improv, right? Like screenwriting, I think, has had its bogeys of this is how you write a screenplay. These are the structures. These are the things you need to do. It becomes over-commodified. It becomes over-formalized. People learn to look at it through that framework. So that's like the feedback cycles that we kind of get into. And I think at a certain point, you sort of have to say like, yes, that works and that can be effective. But how can we break it? How can we make it our own?
And then do we go through another cycle then, Sam, of now every improviser and every improv team is kind of going towards this more, you know, fully inspired based play, then does that get muddled? And then do we crave a two-person scene again, just sitting on the porch in the South, just having a tea and talking about mom again? You know, I wonder, because I think part of, and I think Liam had mentioned it, but part of what's fun about Jamie and Liam's show is they've just watched 2 hours of traditional improv. And then these guys come over here and fuck around with it a little bit, you know? And I wonder if it's a whole night of Liam and Jamie's, does that, I don't know. That's interesting. It's interesting.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, yeah. let's say, Chris, that whatever this is the new wave. Maybe it's not. I don't know.
I think
Say it is. Okay. Let's say it is, because if Will Hines says it and we say it, then who more authority do we need? But let's say that this is where it's going. I don't know that the pendulum will like swing back, but this will have its day in the sun and then it'll keep going, you know? And then 30 years from now, we might say, well, this is how we made our bread and butter. And then, you know, we're the people who we look at now as like the dinosaurs in improv. Mm. And so it's one of those things, this will come and go, I think, you know, as everything does. I don't know that it'll go back to traditional improv. It might, but it might just morph into something different.
That's interesting. I think about becoming a dinosaur all the time because I'm very close to the age of becoming a dinosaur. and I'm hitting that time period where you've been doing improv for a certain amount of years, it's like, oh, that means you're probably not bringing the fucking funk, which is why it's so nice to plug into like you and Liam and you, Sam. It has been really satisfying for me. It's going to be interesting when Jamie, you're plugging into some dude who walks up who's like, what is this? I do want to say that, first of all, it's not all this black and white. It's not like traditional improv is just like all talky, all labely, all boring. There's great work being done. Because on the other side, kind of more towards the clown world, is all the flash with none of the substance. That I could give a fuck about. You know, I don't want to just see an entire show of R2-D2s. You know, I don't want to see the whole team. It's just like, I mean, that's kind of cool, actually. But there is this other thing, Sam, right? Where it's like, I'm asking you to eat your napkin at the end of a date, but the date was substantial and you gave a fuck about that person in there rather than just a series of people eating napkins and scenes. You know what I'm saying? I think Chris will always crave some of that depth, some of that emotion.
Yeah. And this is something that when Jamie and I were working together, we focused a lot of our attention on, because like Jamie sort of had that, like, why can't I be doing this strange thing and we not comment on it? And I think there's room for a couple of those. I think the challenge where the skill in doing that comes in is being specific with it and doing one or two things and not everything strange and we're not commenting on it. It's a tough needle. It's a little bit of like a high wire act, and like you find it and you feel it of, okay, this is like the right amount of strange. Oh, it's a little bit too strange, and now we're a little bit not reacting to how strange everything is. And that's there's a bit of a dance there, but I think there are a couple of different ways that people are sort of coming at this, and I think the clowning is one of them. I think dramatic improv is another one of them. And certainly, you know, some of the people here have shared sort of your belief, Chris, of like, what if we slowed down? What if like we really gave a fuck about what was going on for a minute? What if we're not going for laughs in this scene? What if we're, yeah, just sitting on a porch talking about mom and that's what the scene is? And, you know, I'm getting the sense that it's really about variety, both within shows and between shows. And that's, man, how hard has that been when you're in a show and you're in scene number three and you're like, this is the exact same energy. It's like two of the scenes have had the exact same game of like cool dad or whatever it is. And it's like, no, we just need a completely different kind of energy. That's always been a little bit hard for me to throw into a show.
Well, that's having that macro look at the piece, which a lot of people don't have the wherewithal to have, or like they're in the scene, but knowing where that scene lines up with the other scenes and where we could go and stuff, I feel pretty good about that with my own play, kind of knowing what I think the piece needs, or, you know, whatever, just not doing the same scenes over and over, same energy. It's funny, Sam, a couple of people have reached out to me through my my website saying they've heard that I teach a particular way that they think would be beneficial to them, or more often people get referred to me like, I've heard you're the guy. And like, I almost feel bad because I don't really feel like I'm there anymore. I don't think I'm fully there anymore. I don't think I'm like, let's slow down and cry anymore. Actually, I'm not. But, you know, I did a show the other night. I think it was Pretty Pony, or I don't know what show I did, but like, I do realize no matter what's happening, no matter how crazy everything's going, I will make that time to say, I'm very disappointed in you, or I can't stop thinking about you, or you ruined my life. Like, I'm always still looking for that moment to harpoon the other person with information that's personal. Mm. That doesn't mean I need to slow the whole, I can have that as we're skydiving. Do you know what I'm saying? And fighting, shooting gorillas in the thing, still tell the person, you actually don't mean as much to me as you think you do. What? Pull the fucking parishute. Like, so now I'm just looking for those moments to inject that moment. And it's really fun for me. But the full slowdown, I think it's very beneficial. Also, I'm lucky enough to have worked with a group of people now for years now, Sam. You know, it's like there was a, what years ago, I was like, what if I did my own stuff? And now I have been doing my own stuff, and it's been years. And a lot of these players have been through all these steps with me, and they're really loving this new kind of wild play. But because they've spent years with me doing the slow stuff, we still give a fuck. I mean, the scene you did with Devin and Jamie was fucking sick. Anyway, people are tired of hearing us talk about scenes that they can't see.
Look, your workshops are great.
Your workshops are great. They're recommended.
Even there, though, I wonder if we felt a little bit of that pendulum you're talking about, right? Which is like, oh, so you did the serious stuff for a bit, and now you're getting a little bit more wild. And you know what? Like, you'll exercise that for a little bit, and then the pendulum will swing some other direction, right?
Well, it's such a nice feeling, because my whole life I've wanted the answer. The answer to booking, the answer to good auditions, the answer to good scene work and stuff. And I can like see the chapters of my life, and it's like the majority of my life is me searching. And then I find something that feels good and works for me, and I go, I've done it. I found it. This is me. And now I'm realizing, no, it's a series of flags I'm planting, and that's really exciting too. But I had to be in a certain headspace or a place in my life that I could allow for the change, a little bit more of like, I don't know, open to everything. I used to be very guarded, and I'm better and you're bad, or he's good and I want to be better than him. And it's this very tight, restricted way of playing and teaching. And you know, Jamie and Liam are now doing these workshops, and they're like these kind of drop-ins, and they're playing with these people. And like, that only makes my heart grow even bigger. And I mean that genuinely, like, hell yeah. I want more people to keep playing. It doesn't just need to be me. I don't know why I'm going off on this tangent, but it's just, I'm really excited about where we are in performance. I'm really excited about my rehearsals. I'm really excited about my classes. And I'm really excited about my shows. I haven't said that for a long time. For a long time, I would say, I'm good at my classes. I'm good at my rehearsals. I'm good at my shows, but not excited. And I'm excited again. I'm fucking stoked.
Yes. Well, I think part of what you guys were talking about was quietly processing. But that needle, that high wire that Sam's talking about, I think is what we've been talking about for years, is that pop punk, that Blink 182, where you're just punk enough to give the man the finger, but also pop enough to get people to listen to you give the man the finger, right? It's like, it's a little bit of both of those, where yeah, you're pushing against the status quos, the traditions, but also making it accessible to an audience to appreciate you pushing against the status quo. And I think that's what I've struggled with, is that's the high wire. That's very difficult. And I forget who said this, but they were like, you know, the problem with artists is that they don't talk enough. As like, if artists spoke more about their work and helped the masses understand what they were doing, then, you know, the weirdo wire hanging from the ceiling holding somebody's flip-flop would mean something to the people, as opposed to, the fuck is that? That looks like garbage. And then you just move on. So I think it's more of a dialogue between the performers and audience members, either an improv, we don't usually directly explain what we're about to do and why, you know, it's significant, but finding those ways to, you know, have that pop, have that punk, so that the audience can just appreciate it. And I think, like we were talking about clowning, I think a lot of clowning misses that. It's gone too far punk, and it plays to its own niche audience. And it's really hard for people to understand what they're doing, even if they're doing beautiful work and it's funny in its own niche way. The masses can't understand it. And I think some clowns are defensive about that. Like, well, fuck the masses. And it's like, okay. But then you just kind of slowly make yourself less and less relevant, you know? And I don't know, to make art meaningful, I think you have to make it relevant, make it accessible to as many people as possible, but also being true to your own voice and vision. So it's that pop punk. And I feel like Chris, Sam, Liam, we're kind of locking into some of these things and finding a way to speak to the audience while also speaking to our own interests. And I think that's really exciting, very fun. So maybe that's why you're excited, Chris. It's why I'm excited.
I love it. I love it. Before we get out of here, Sam, do you have anything else to add on this? Because I have one last.
No, I mean,
please.
I was listening to some of our more recent older episodes, and I'm very happy from like a year and a half ago or so, when like performance was starting to come back a little bit. We were like, what's it going to be like? Like, it does. It's very nice to now sort of hear the excitement. And I think people in the community are excited too, to like try new stuff and to like do new things. It's like, you know, shows are going on a little bit more regularly, which is all very good. So that's
I love that. Before we get out of here, one of our listeners and our friends, Alex Lee, just had a couple of thoughts on hosting, which I thought was interesting. He said one aspect of hosting that wasn't discussed that he's done before was hosting a short form jam, which is interesting because we did hosting and we did a short form show. Because he says, I'm not only introducing the games, but I effectively have to teach it since not everyone necessarily knows the games. That is a really interesting job, I think. The idea of having to host, that's very specific, a short form jam. So you're introduced, you bring the players up, but not all the players might know the games. So you have to be efficient and you know, clear enough that the players know what the game is and while also still maintaining the host position. I don't know, I like that specific little niche that we didn't talk about. I think that that could be pretty difficult.
Yeah, we had the Herald players host jams after Herald night, and hosting a long form jam, very sort of similar, like when you're performing in the montage and you're hosting the show, you kind of have to make sure that everyone gets involved in a scene, right? Or you have to direct a little bit from the inside, even as a host, which is the short form hosting sounds a little bit more challenging, but it just kind of reminded me, like, oh yeah, long form jam hosting is also a little different.
And I want to thank Alex for writing in, and I don't know, we don't know what we're doing with this, but you know, if you have something to say, please email us or reach out to us through Instagram. I'll be happy to bring it up with the boys here. I don't know if this is a little segment here we're adding at the end of the episode. I don't know. Jamie, what do you think we're going to title this episode that we just did?
God, that is always my task, isn't it? I don't know.
Okay, we'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out. But if you have thoughts on it, I guess I was asking for the title because we did cover a lot of ground there. But if you were listening to this and something sparked for you, something that you agree with or disagree with or something we missed, please let us know. Because I think that's the point of all of this, is we want to keep learning and engaging and having this dialogue. And thanks everyone for listening and reaching out. It's been really fun to be back.